Thelonious Monk with Round Midnight. Sir Tim Smith was talking to Michael Barclay. Next Sunday on Private Passions, Michael's guest will be the geneticist Dame Linda Partridge, who specialises in the investigation of age-related diseases. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3, and the producer of today's programme was Chris Marshall. This is BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's just after 1 o'clock. Time now for the news. I'm Jill Anderson. A car bomb explosion outside a police station in the Syrian capital Damascus has killed at least 10 people and injured several more. It happened in a Christian area in the centre of the old city as the United Nations peace envoy Lakhdar Brahimi was meeting President Assad. Mr. Brahimi urged both sides to order immediate ceasefires. In Lebanon, thousands of protesters and mourners have gathered in central Beirut for the funeral of a senior security official killed in a car bomb attack on Friday. The event is also being used to protest against the Syrian government, which opposition politicians say assassinated Wissam al-Hassan. The Home Secretary, Theresa May, has confirmed that the government will introduce a new offence of supplying firearms to criminals. Details will be announced by David Cameron tomorrow in a speech outlining what he'll call a tough but intelligent new approach to law and order. Earlier this year, a Home Office assessment of the old offence concluded that any fall in crime would be only temporary. The former head of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Ian Blair, is advising people not to vote in elections to choose police and crime commissioners next month. Sir Ian said the government had gone about introducing commissioners in the wrong way because each would have too large an area to control. The family of a woman killed in a series of hit-and-run incidents in Cardiff on Friday have said she gave her life protecting two of her children. Karina Menzies, who was 32, was one of 14 people injured. A 31-year-old man is being questioned. The former United States Senator and presidential candidate George McGovern has died aged 90. His early and increasingly strong criticisms of the Vietnam War made him a hero of the American left and the anti-war movement. He won the Democratic nomination in 1972, but suffered a landslide defeat to Richard Nixon. And the weather. It'll be a dry afternoon for most of the country, with further sunny spells, the best of which will be in the north and west. Southeastern England will remain rather dull and cloudy, though, with spells of rain, which will spread across much of the south this evening. Well, that's the BBC News and Weather. This is BBC Radio 3, and we're now stepping back in time with the Early Music Show. Here's Catherine Bott. In today's Early Music Show, we're taking a look at a 16th century emperor who had a distinctly musical ear, Charles V. His ear is not the feature of his physiognomy that drew the most attention in his lifetime. No, that was his Habsburg chin. And his love of music isn't what he was known for either. That had to take second place in his life to his role at the head of the Holy Roman Empire. But the fact that the most powerful man in 16th century Europe was musical is immensely helpful to present-day scholars, and of course lovers of early music, because his patronage meant that a great many works associated with him survived to be enjoyed in later centuries. Charles had quite an impressive lineage. He was the son of Philip the Handsome and Joanna the Mad of Castile. His paternal grandparents were Emperor Maximilian and Mary of Burgundy, and his maternal grandparents were Ferdinand of Aragon and Isabella of Castile, the Catholic kings whose marriage had united Spain. And through them, there's an English connection. Their daughter, of course, was Catherine of Aragon, who was the first wife of our own Henry VIII. Charles's cousin was Mary Tudor, who married his son, Philip of Spain. But let's get to the music. Charles himself was born in the Flemish city of Ghent in the year 1500, and his early years were filled with the sound of church music, with daily mass and a constant round of special services to mark all sorts of events. Jacob Obrecht was born in Ghent too, 50 years or so earlier, and most of his appointments were in Flanders, so his sacred music may well have been heard by the young Charles. Here's the first part of his Salve Crux Arbor Vitae. Hail, O cross, illustrious tree of life, banner, throne, and altar of Christ.
Salve, Salve. The Dufay consort, directed by Gary Cooper, performing the first part of Salve Crux Arbor Vitae by Obrecht. Between them, Charles's parents and grandparents made him heir to four of Europe's leading dynasties, the Trastamare of the Kingdom of Castile and the Crown of Aragon, the Burgundian Valois of the Duchy of Burgundy and the Habsburgs of Austria. And as well as ruling over vast tracts of Europe, there were the Castilian colonies in the Americas and the Philippines. And he was brought up to behave accordingly. As a young man, he was steeped in the complex etiquette of chivalry and the knightly tournament, and he carried that through to his military leadership. There was a song about his courage in battle. "The emperor is a man of honour. He marches in the foremost rank, on horse or on foot. Take heart, all ye bold foot soldiers, for the emperor himself has said, we will not yield." People have always expected noble looks as well as noble behaviour from their royals. But sadly, Charles was pitifully deficient in the former department. Not only was he unheroically slight of build, he also had bulging eyes, a large nose, and that outsized chin, which he tried to disguise with a beard as soon as he could grow one. He wasn't blessed with a robust constitution either. He suffered from indigestion, asthma, piles, possibly diabetes, and gout, which first struck him in his 20s and could leave him bedridden and in agony for days at a time. But his unfortunate looks and chronic ill health didn't stop him getting an excellent all-round education, which he needed if he was to convince people in all the territories he was to rule. He studied all the languages of his various lands, saying that he spoke Spanish to God, Italian to women, French to men, and German to my horse. French was his mother tongue, though, and despite a rather on-off entente with the kings of France, he took delight in his many visits to France, where he must have heard music by Josquin des Prez. In fact, Josquin's exquisite Mille Regrets was said to be the emperor's song. We'll hear it now in a pair with his Guillaume se va chauffer. Two songs by Josquin. Guillaume goes to warm himself at the fireside, and before it, A Thousand Regrets at Leaving You, also known as The Emperor's Song, performed there by Nancy Knowles and Frank Wallace. Charles was given a thorough schooling in government and statesmanship, as well as in chivalry and languages, and for much of his life was largely admired for his dutiful application to the business of ruling. But his life was also governed by his faith, so sacred music continued to be important. In Brussels, he had a court chapel with mainly Flemish musicians. When he took them to Spain, they were called the Capilla Flamenca. When he came of age in 1515, he assembled La Grande Chapelle at his Spanish court, including Burgundian composers Larue, Bredemers, and Marbrianus de Orto, whose Lamentations of Jeremiah we'll hear now, performed by the Huelgas Ensemble, directed by Paul van Nevel. Music by Orto, one of the composers in Charles's Chapel, performed by the Huelgas Ensemble. At 17, Charles inherited the throne of Spain, and 2 years later, in 1519, he became Holy Roman Emperor. And what exactly was the Holy Roman Empire? Well, in a nutshell, it was a union of territories which at various times over hundreds of years completely dominated what is now Europe, although strangely, it never actually included Rome itself. The first Holy Roman Emperor was Charlemagne, crowned in the year 800, and the last was Francis II, who abdicated and disbanded the empire in 1806. When Charles became emperor, he was able to use the position to establish an even grander royal chapel, with several maestros di cappella, including Thomas Crequion, whom he called the truest Orpheus of the age, along with Cornelius Canis, Nicolas Payen, and Adrien Picard. Nicolas Gombert was master of the choristers. Music from three of these composers now. Sacred music by Gombert, his Tulerunt Dominum Meum, They Have Taken My Lord, I Know Not Where. But first, two chansons of a more temporal nature. Nicolas Payen's Move Your Legs, You Lovely Lasses, Move 'Em Up and Down. And first, Whoever Wants to Get His Way by Cornelius Canis.
Thank you.
chanson by two of Charles V's chapel composers, Canis and Payen, performed by Egidius Quartet, and sacred music by Gombert from Oxford Camerata, directed by Jeremy Summerlee. At the age of 26, Charles married his cousin Isabel of Portugal, another territory for the empire. Well, his motto was plus ultra, further beyond. And it wasn't just the empire which was growing. Charles's musical connections grew with marriage too. His bride came with her own musical establishment, among them the Spanish organist Antonio de Capithon. This is his Un Gay Berger, played on the organ of the Monastery of Our Lady of Grace in the Spanish town of Madrigal de las Altas Torres, the birthplace of Charles's grandmother, Isabella of Castile. Kimberly Marshall playing music by Cabethon, the composer who worked for Charles's bride, Isabel of Portugal. Charles V was increasingly drawn to the religious fervour that prevailed in the Iberian Peninsula, and although he was never fully accepted by the Spanish, he was to spend most of his adult life in Spain. He began to alternate the sternest of Christian self-denial with grand bouts of gluttony, rising at 5 a.m. for breakfast with iced beer and continuing to gorge throughout an average day. Despite his piety, he even wangled a dispensation to forego fasting before taking communion. No one could stop him eating. Not even the torments of gout held him back. His chamberlain once said, "Surely kings must think that their stomachs are not made like other men's." He really was a man of contradictions, devotions alternating with binge eating, insecurity about his looks belied by his commissioning of numerous portraits, which did their best to flatter him, but there was only so far that even Titian could go. And although his marriage to Isabel produced at least three children, he was also a famous serial adulterer. These are just the entertaining titbits that always surround great men and women of history like a penumbra. But in his lifetime, what was Charles actually for? He must have had to acknowledge that he'd seemingly been put on earth to endure constant dispute with ambitious men who were out to expand their own territories within the Holy Roman Empire. So there were cyclical problems with France and various Italian duchies, and even in Germany, where Charles's power was limited by various local princes. The Ottoman Empire was constantly nibbling away at exposed corners of Charles's lands on the Mediterranean coast. But music remained a pleasure and a comfort to Charles. His Capilla Flamenca travelled with him everywhere, and he loved to sing. Towards the end of his reign, the young Orlando Lassus was just starting out, and offered his secular motet, Herum Soboles, in the hope of an appointment to the Capilla Flamenca. The text gives a clue to his strategy here. Scion of an heroic line, loved by the world, Charles, you alone can protect your subjects. Long may you live, best and greatest hope of the Austrian people. Musical job application by Lassus, performed by Chapelle du Roi, directed by Alastair Dixon. Lassus wasn't successful, but his application did lead one of Charles's ministers to procure a post for him at the court of Duke Albrecht of Bavaria. And that's another story for another time. The biggest threat to the power of the Holy Roman Empire was the unstoppable force of humanism and Protestantism. In the 1520s, Charles dismissed Martin Luther's arguments for Reformation as an argument between monks. But over the next 30 years, he grew more and more dispirited by the constant battle to defend his faith. In 1556, he suddenly abdicated his various titles, giving his Spanish Empire, which included Spain, the Netherlands, Naples, and the American colonies, to his son, who became Philip II of Spain. he handed over his Austrian lands and the care of the Holy Roman Empire to his brother Ferdinand. And then he retired to the monastery of Yuste in Spain, where he sang with the monks and slowly surrendered to his old enemy, gout. He was carried around the monastery in a sedan chair, and special ramps were installed to give him access to his rooms. Charles V, former Holy Roman Emperor, died in September 1558, and the composer Don Fernando de las Infantas marked his passing with a setting of the penitential text Parce mihi Domine. Spare me, Lord, for my days are nothing. I will sleep in the dust, and in the morning you will seek me in vain. It's sung now by Chapelle du Roi.
Thank you.
Pace Mihi Domine by Don Fernando de las Infantas, performed there by Chapelle Dubois, directed by Alistair Dixon. And that ends today's Early Music Show. It was presented by Catherine Bott and produced in Manchester by Sam Phillips. The programme was first broadcast in 2008.
You've got to create a universe where you tell the story of a world from its beginning to the end.
We do all four operas in the space of a week, and I appear in three out of the four. So the stamina required is enormous.
It all comes together. One of the greatest of all musical achievements, Richard Wagner's The Ring of the Nibelung, a tale of love, power and corruption. Every note from the Royal Opera House in London with Bryn Terfel, Sarah Connolly and Susan Bullock. On BBC Radio 3, Wagner's Ring Cycle, continuing with Siegfried this afternoon, live from 2:45 on BBC Radio 3.
And the time now is 2 o'clock. The BBC has launched a brand new radio app for smartphones, so you can now listen to live BBC radio anywhere you want. It's got an alarm function, so you can wake up with Radio 3 in the morning if you want to. All the stations are there at your fingertips, plus lots of extras, such as videos and downloads, and you can catch up on programmes you've missed really easily. It's available for iPhones now, and other phones are coming very soon. You can still listen, as ever, on any smartphone via the Radio 3 website. So, go to the Radio 3 website to download it, and we'd love to hear what you think. Right at the end of Schubert's life in 1828, he wrote what were to be his last piano works, three sonatas in C minor, A major and B flat major. And it's this last one that we're going to hear now. All the sonatas have four movements and all have a moderately fast first movement, a slow second, a scherzo or minuet and trio for the third, and a fast movement for the last. While Schubert was writing these piano works, he was also composing the string quintet in C, and it's been pointed out that the slow movement of the quintet and the slow movement of the B-flat sonata have certain similarities in musical texture and emotion. The B-flat sonata starts with a movement marked molto moderato, in which Schubert delights in moving through various keys that are rather unexpected. The slow movement, Andante sostenuto, is in C-sharp minor, a key just about as remote from B-flat major as you can get, but a key that had been touched on in the first movement. The scherzo movement is marked con delicatezza, and it's a movement full of delightful melodic phrases, again moving through keys that surprise the listener. As Philip Radcliffe pointed out, the unceremonious way in which the music goes into D-flat at the end of the first half and the cadence at the end of the second are very characteristic of Schubert's latest style. The latter has a decided foretaste of Brahms. The fourth movement opens with an octave on G, a device that Schubert had used before in the Trout Quintet. It's a rondo movement which closes with an energetic presto. So let's hear the sonata now. It's played by Imogen Cooper at a concert at the Queen Elizabeth Hall on London's South Bank in December 2009.